All right, before we get to today's podcast, I got a couple questions for you, starting with, have you just lost to the guy who auto-drafted?
Screaming at the TV again because someone who can't hear you dropped an open pass?
Just dropped your RB1 for a kicker?
Thought your fantasy draft was a good first date idea?
You were probably just blindsided by hunger.
Luckily, Snickers is here to pick your sorry butt up off the turf.
Get back on your game with NFL Hunger Bars from Snickers.
And now, Move the Sticks with Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Move the Sticks, presented by Castrol Edge. DJ Bucky here. Buck, man, we've got so much to get to today. We've got college football in the rearview mirror, and out the windshield, we're looking ahead at week one of the NFL.
So many things to talk about. Big trades, Khalil Mack being traded to Chicago Bears. We can talk about Nate Peterman being named a starter over Josh Allen in Buffalo. And then we have to talk about this weekend in college football. I took some L's. I'm not really happy about it.
God, but a big win, though. You did have one. I think you lone wolfed and came up with a W there.
Yeah, no one cares.
Sully had a great week. We'll get to that a little bit later on in the show. But some NFL news we do want to touch on here. And you mentioned a couple starters' names, Sam Darnold being the rookie, the young starter there for the Jets. And we'll get a chance to talk on that. Peterman getting the nod over Josh Allen in Buffalo. Want to talk about some players that I think have a lot of pressure on. The hype machine has built some guys up, and now it's no longer on paper. It's going to go to grass, and we're going to see who can deliver here with some of these guys. But I think you mentioned it, Buck, the trade of Khalil Mack. It's been a couple days. We haven't had a chance to discuss it and give our thoughts, so I'll give you the floor here. I'll yield the floor to you on this trade.
This is why you need a checks and balances system in the front office. This is why coaches and general managers need to be on board. This is why you need to have two of them. You can't have one person who has complete control, because coaches tend to see short-sighted. They think about the here and now. They think about what the team looks like today and not what it should look like 2-3 years from now. General managers should have a little more long eye view. They understand where you're trying to go. They have a better feel for managing situations to allow the team to consistently be a contender over the long haul. In this situation, what I think you see is a clear divide between John Gruden's vision and the vision that was previously laid down by Reggie McKenzie. Reggie McKenzie drafted Khalil Mack, drafted him fourth overall. They developed into a player that was not only an all-pro player, but a defensive player of the year winner. Those are typically the kind of guys that you want to have on your roster for the long term, particularly when they're young, athletic, they have great character on the field and off the field, and they're very, very productive. For me, I just can't understand why the Oakland Raiders would let a guy that is a homegrown guy walk out the door for two first-round picks, which to me are just coin flips. I don't know if you can get players, two players, who will turn out to be as good as Khalil Mack has been for them in their prime.
Yeah, there's a lot to unpack here, a lot of different areas we can look at with this trade. First of all, when you look at what Chicago gave up, and you look at Chicago's draft record, you know, I know Ryan hasn't been there that long. Ryan Pace hasn't been there that long. But if you look over the last decade, there are a lot of misses in there. All right. You mentioned it's a coin flip. Now, hopefully your odds are a little bit better than a 50-50 chance here. But this team, when you look at the way it's constructed, I think you're probably talking about a Bears team that's going to be, especially with Khalil Mack in tow now, you're probably, I would say the range there, it's probably a 12 to 17, you know, 10 to 18, if you want to widen that range a little bit, type pick. And the chances you're going to hit home runs there, I don't know that you're going to hit home
tough.
Runs. To find another Khalil Mack, I mean, that's going to be very tough to do. So I don't have a problem with the Bears giving up what they gave up draft pick-wise. When you look at it from the other side there with the Raiders, Buck, I just think you use the tools that you have in place. The franchise tag is there. Use it. Now, we've seen players, Kirk Cousins used it to his benefit. Mm-hmm. The teams have the ability to use it to their benefit. I would have done that if I was the Oakland Raiders. Say, if you don't want to budge and pay him all that money, don't pay him all that money, but call his bluff. Khalil Mack loves football. I just find it hard to believe that he really would have sat out, you know, an extended period of time into this season. Maybe he's stronger in his conviction that he would have held out. I have my doubts. I would have called his bluff. See if you can get him to come in. And then if you have to, you let him function off franchise tags in the future. He's 27 years old. You have that in your weaponry to hold him for the next 3 or 4 years. And that's when you're getting the prime of Khalil Mack. So that's why I wouldn't have done it. I get it with John Gruden saying we didn't want to pay him all that money. We can go through the numbers of, you know, championship teams usually the numbers are what they are. They don't devote a certain percentage of their cap to one defensive player. It hasn't been done. Von Miller got paid after they won the Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. Haven't been able to get it done since. Clay Matthews was another one. So I get it, not wanting to pay him all that money that the Bears paid him, but then just use the franchise tag as a weapon. It's there for you.
It's funny because I've said this in recent weeks that the league is becoming more offensive-centric. Teams are studying how teams are going about doing their business, and the teams who are really built around their offenses are the ones that win. Even the great defensive teams, good offense is trumping good defense. Like the way the league rules are, you can just avoid dominant pass rushes. You can throw away from dominant corners. So you're investing in offensive personnel. With that said, it's still hard for me to shake the old school traditional notions that I was reared on coming up through the scouting business where you like to draft, develop, and re-sign your own players. It's still hard for me to think that a pass rusher is not one of the marquee positions on the roster. And so when you have a guy who has proven to be a dominant pass rusher, a guy who can impact the game, a guy who also carries himself like a captain, does all the other stuff, typically you like to reward those players. To just move on from that player, to easily dismiss him, not only does it make sense from a business perspective, it really sends a bad message to your locker room. Because Khalil Mack, by all accounts, did everything you could possibly ask a top player to do, and to not be appreciated by the franchise, man, it sends a weird message to the thing. But not only that, you now, if you're John Gruden, you've put all the pressure on Derek Carr, because you have now made it where he is anointed as the best player in the locker room, and maybe he is the best player in the locker room. But now you're asking him, I'm asking him to be Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady. No matter what you have around you, defense, offense, or whatever, we expect to win because we're paying you $20, $25 million. Make us right. And I don't know if Derek Carr is that dude.
Yeah, look, it's a lot of pressure on him. I just go back, man, 2016, Buck. It's not like I'm going back 10 years. 2016, this is a 12-4 team with a budding young quarterback and a superstar. I think he was a defensive player of the year that year,
yes.
Right? Mack was.
Yes.
And now you've oh man, I don't know. And the other thing, talking to people around the league, we shared some thoughts, and this was a theme that kept coming up over and over again. Not all first-round picks are equal. It depends on who's making the first-round picks. So how confident are you that Oakland, in a situation where I don't know if GM and head coach, what that relationship looks like, it does not look good from the outside that they're on the same page. John Gruden's track record has been wanting veteran players over younger players. Doesn't have a great track record of developing young players. So I don't know if two first-round picks in the hands of the Oakland Raiders would be as valuable as two first-round picks in the hands of a different organization.
Let's just go back through and talk about some of their picks. They took DJ Hayden. Yeah. They took Carl Joseph, who's fine,
yeah,
but he's not a star. Who
else? Corner from Ohio State.
Gary Conley, who didn't really play last year.
Yep.
So when you look at recently what the Oakland Raiders have been able to get in the first round of the draft, it hasn't been a lot that you really are excited about. And then John Gruden came through and basically took a machete to all of the draft picks that they had the last couple years. They've cut everybody. So this is a team that doesn't have a young –
they got old.
They don't have a young – I want to say they have one of the oldest rosters, if not the oldest roster in the National Football League. Today's game is now a young man's game. You cannot have so many old vets to do it just because the way the game is played, the way you're compensating players, it just doesn't make fiscal sense. I just don't like what the Oakland Raiders are doing. I think, man, you're locked into your coach for 10 years. Good luck. Good luck.
Good luck. Well, look, the Bears now, I think – you know, this puts a little bit of pressure on them. They need to be a good football team and start winning a bunch of games because they've made some investment, not only in contracts doled out in free agency. Now you bring in premier defensive player in the league in Khalil Mack, and you've traded some draft picks. Look, it's all out there. Now, we talked about the pressure being on Derek Carr. There's some pressure now on Mitchell Trubisky for this team to win some football games, and that has to start right away.
It has to start right away, but I actually think they've alleviated some of the pressure because now when I look at this team I think you can always look at someone's past to get a real good sense of what their future is going to be. And when I look back at Vic Fangio's past, we can go and look at what they had during the heyday at San Francisco.
Oh, Alden Smith and Justin Smith.
So Alden Smith, Justin Smith, and then on the other side it was Amar Brooks. But what you had up front, you had finesse and you had power. They now can recreate that. Leonard Floyd is the finesse. Khalil Mack is the power. inside, Roquan Smith. Well, what did the San Francisco 49ers have? They had Patrick Willis and Navarro Bowman. I'm going to say Roquan is more like Patrick Willis being able to come and play. But then you have Danny Trevathan in there.
Who can run.
So then up front, Akeem Hicks and some of those other guys they wrote through. That front seven is loaded. In the back end, you got Kyle Fuller to play. Okay. You had the young safety, Eddie Jackson, who played pretty solidly his first year. Yeah. So now I'm looking at the Chicago team. They can play the style of play that Chicago fans are used to. Defense leads it. You got to run a game with Jordan Howard, Tariq Cohen. Even though we're saying we want the quarterback to be out there, I think Matt Nagy may have the luxury of still dialing it back some and playing good football, playing close games without having to open it up and say, hey, look at my offensive ingenuity. We're going to play old school football, find a way to make the quarterback better by really limiting his exposure as a passer.
It's funny. Vic Fangio was with the Ravens when I was there. And to me, kind of trying to recreate a little bit of what we had there in Baltimore. Yeah. We had Jamal Lewis to run the football on offense. Then you get on the defensive side of the ball. They've kind of got their Suggs now.
Yes.
And really, you make a case a better player than Suggs and Khalil Mack. And then you look at Roquan Smith, kind of hoping you're hoping he's going to be your Ray Lewis. Those are obviously big shoes to fill, but those are type of the roles that they have there. The only difference is Eddie Jackson, nice player. He ain't Ed Reed.
Oh, no. And that's the thing. They've needed a safety for a while, but a good pass rush can mask some of the deficiencies that you have in the back end. They can be solid in the back end. That front seven, though,
can nasty.
Get after it. I can't wait to see it. I know Khalil Mack is only going to be there for a week, but I'm going to be in Green Bay for that game.
Ooh.
I'm excited to see it feel love. We'll see what happens.
And we're going to get a chance to preview all these games on the next pod that will be dropping Thursday. Sully, is that correct? We got a Thursday pod
That
coming?
Is correct. Yes, sir.
So we'll get into all these previews. But, yeah, this is – I think it's fun, you know, for us to cover, and it's fun around the league. It's a lot of buzz when you get a big-time trade like this. Not often you see a premier player really in his prime.
You just never see it.
Getting traded.
You
so
give away good players.
Yeah, well, it maybe – we're all looking back on this, and somehow the Bears somehow fall on their face, and then the Oakland Raiders have the first pick, and they can't screw it up by who's there, and they end up getting their own pass rusher for cheaper, and then they're all just laughing at us and saying, look, you guys gave us all this grief. It all worked out. Sam Darnold, named the starter with the New York Jets. Not a surprise, Buck. We've been expecting this to happen, correct?
No, we expected because I thought when you saw him play, he felt like a starter when you watched him. The way he had control over it, he didn't play skittish or nervous. There was no anxiety that I sensed from watching him on tape. I felt like they did a really good job of scheming it up to give him some successful throws. They did a lot of empty formation and spread sets, allowed him to get the ball out of his hands. We saw him use his athleticism to create plays with the movement part of the passing game. I really like what Sam Darnold has been, and it's kind of funny, man. And I know this always happened in the draft process, but the farther removed we get away from when guys play, the more the narrative changes, only to then come back to your face when you see him play and you realize, man, you know what? Sam Darnold's a really good player.
No question.
And all of the conversation, I think he's going to be a really good player, and I think they're going to follow the LA Rams and Philadelphia Eagles model. Play with what he has this year, see what he needs, and then I think they're going to build the offense around him when it comes to the personnel that they surround him by.
All right, people keep asking, okay, you know Sam Darnold, you guys have studied him like crazy, you know this Jets roster, you know who they're playing. So if you're going to make a prediction for what type of year Sam Darnold's going to have, put some numbers on it. I'm going to give you the numbers of a quarterback's rookie season, Buck, and I'm going to see if you can guess which quarterback it is. And if you're listening, play along with the game here. But this is the type of year that I see for Sam Darnold. You ready? All right, 61.1% completion percentage, 16 touchdowns, 11 picks, 3,440 yards.
Sounds like Carson Wentz, right?
No. Nope. Got to go back a little ways.
Oh.
This is 2008.
I see the Joe Flacco and Matt Ryan. Matt Ryan. Yeah,
man. That's the type of year. There you go. Thank you, Sully. He deserves a round of applause.
Process of elimination.
No, but I could see Matt Ryan, you know, just thinking back in my mind what he was like as a rookie. And people, you could see it and say, okay, he's going to be a good player.
And also, they went to the playoffs. But remember what they had. The thing that's a little different, what they did for Matt Ryan is they surrounded him. They had Michael Burner-Turner. Michael Burner-Turner, those first 2 years that he was in the league, he was able to kind of be the bell cow because I think he had a bunch of yards rushing. They picked him up from San Diego. He was the lead back. And then they kind of slowly – they still had Roddy White. They slowly added pieces around it, but they were able to run
Michael
the football.
Michael Turner had 1,699 yards.
Yes. So they grinded it out.
The 17 thing, touchdowns for the burner.
Oh, he had a great. He had great. Like, they went to the playoffs for Matt Ryan's.
Jarius Norwood had a decent year that year too.
So they had two backs. They had Roddy.
Roddy went for 1,300 yards and 7 touchdowns.
And so that's the thing. The thing about the Jets don't have that right now. If they had a marquee running back, if they had what we would deem to be a marquee receiver, I would feel better about them winning games with Sam. But I do believe Sam is going to play pretty solidly for the team.
Here's the thing. I've spent the morning watching a bunch of tape, and I actually ended up watching a bunch of Jets defense for some reason, just kind of going through it.
Defense is good.
I'll tell you what, their defense got a chance not just to be good, they got a chance to have a great defense.
That defense is loaded now.
Avery Williamson is a really good player. Darren Lee has come on and developed into a really good linebacker. We know about the young safeties. We talk about them. We know about Leonard Williams. Now, obviously, they don't have that big edge rusher because they were one of the teams mentioned in the Khalil Mack sweepstakes.
Can you imagine if they get Khalil Mack?
I'm telling you. Then you've got Jermaine at one corner. They've got some really good pieces in place on that defense, which if they can keep the score down, Sam Darnold, we've talked about it on here. One of the things to help these young quarterbacks, old school way was keep everybody in, max protect, give him time. New school way is fan everybody out. Let's get 4 and 5 wide. Let the defense declare themselves and get the ball out quick. I think you can continue to see that with Sam Darnold. And you're not going to have to be too aggressive pushing the ball down the field if your defense can keep you in games where some field goal drives are a good thing. You don't need to necessarily be so big play hungry. Take it when it's there, but be a little bit more efficient. That's why, to me, Sam Darnold, 4,000 yards, I don't think so. I think a little bit over 3,000 yards. I don't know if he gets 20 touchdowns, but if their defense can play well, they won't need him to do all that.
No, I don't think they will need him to do that at all. I think the big thing that you want to look for is, how do they set it up for him very, very early? Do they try and play ahead of the chains, meaning they throw him first down as opposed to run, run, pass, punt?
Yeah.
If they can get him to be efficient on first down, they can win the first down battle, meaning they get 4 more yards on that first down. I think they're playing the right way. We'll see. They've been very, very productive with guys that you don't know, guys who aren't household names on the outside. Robbie Anderson, you think about Quincy Enunwa, maybe Terrell Pryor has a showing and kind of shows up in Jermaine Kearse. Maybe those four guys can give them the kind of production when it comes to one-on-ones. But I absolutely believe you when you say that they're going to spread it out, they're going to open it up and let them see. It's the easiest way for a young quarterback to play. Eliminate the disguise. Let me see when the pressure's coming, and then put it on me to get the ball out of my hands.
All right, you want to play some Jeopardy?
Let's do it.
Let's play a little Jeopardy here because I'm going to give you the answer to the question, and you have to tell me what the question is.
All right.
This quarterback in his second season will be opening up against the following teams, the Ravens, the Chargers, the Vikings, and the Packers. Which just named starting quarterback gets to face that
Who is Nathan Peterman?
Hey, very nice. Well, a little Jeopardy here.
Who is
congratulations on winning the job. Your offensive line stinks, and you get to play the Ravens, the Chargers, the Vikings, and the Packers.
You're the human pinata. That's who he is. He is the human pinata. He is going to get beat to a pulp. They're going to sacrifice him for 4 games before Josh Allen goes in. And those defenses, man, if he had a problem with the Chargers last year, that first game, I'm not saying he'll throw 5 picks. But it's going to be tough because
he's played great in the preseason. I don't want to get that loss. It's the preseason. But when you look at their offensive line, it is not good up front.
Very efficient.
I don't know how they're going to block these teams.
They're not going to be able to block those teams.
And who scares you in the passing game?
Nobody.
They're going to get the ball to.
Man, and I don't know if you saw the comment, but, man, Brandon Bean had some telling comments when he talked about Corey Coleman because we thought that when they acquired Corey Coleman for a 7th-round pick, which was nothing, that, okay, now we see they got a little speed, a little size. Mm-hmm. They really begin to build this around it. But he said that, look, I couldn't justify keeping the guy around just to keep him around when he hadn't earned a spot. So, for me,
I don't know what the attitude issue is with Corey Coleman, but there is so much smoke. There must be an enormous fire there if him just not being wired the way you need to be wired, because the ability is there. I mean, he's a talented physical ability, but this is two teams that have just completely given up on him.
Well, I mean, I think you can see it a little bit, and I'm probably a little too close to the situation having been around him in events and coached him or whatever, but, like, he definitely has a high opinion of himself as a player. And I think
based off of what?
Well, I mean, look, he's
a first-round pick.
First-round pick coming from Baylor, doing all those things or whatever. But, like, you have to know that in the league, it's so much different. You have to kind of earn your way. You get your opportunity first because you're the first-round pick, but then you have to have the kind of production and performance that allows them to continue to keep you in the mix. And when you, once you've been cut or traded away once, no one else is tied into you. And so I thought it's interesting that Buffalo moved on from him, because when you think about Nate Peterman and what they need for Josh Allen eventually, they have Kelvin Benjamin. But, man, those other guys – are just guys. Who are they going to throw to?
I'm looking at just the whole roster, and one of the fun exercises to do in personnel departments, we used to do this all the time, is just go through and say, okay, how many championship-level players are on this team?
How many blues?
Guys that you think will be a part of a championship-level run. And this roster, look, I think Deion Dawkins got a chance to be a really good left tackle. So that's a piece that is part of the future there. John Miller, okay. But you, LeSean McCoy is a championship piece, but I don't know how much longer you're going to have him with the running back getting up there in age and a lot of wear and tear on him.
You just don't see
Kyle Williams
plus.
Has been a championship level player. Again, he's near the end. Tremaine Edmonds, you're hoping that he's going to be that guy. Micah Hyde is one of those guys. Tre'Davious White is one of those guys. Jordan Poyer's a good player. But overall, Buck, just the blue chip guys, there's not a lot of blue chip guys on this team, man. If I'm Josh Allen, and we had said it, look, I think he's got so much more ability than Peterman that they might just throw him out there just because he's just more gifted. But if I'm Josh Allen and I'm staring at Ravens, Chargers, Vikings, Packers, go get him, Nate. Let me know how it goes, bud. We'll be ready. We'll be ready once we get to that little stretch.
No, and I think Josh Allen let the football world know that he wasn't ready for the moment yet when he talked about the game being so much faster.
You couldn't get over that when that.
No, when he
came
said
out.
It, I just think you have to listen to your players. I think if you're really tuned in, as much as we, as executives or coaches or whatever, want to push guys on the field, you need to listen to them and hear. And when he said, "Hey, it's so much faster. It's really fast. It's overwhelming." That to me was a sign like, "Hey, he's not ready yet." And if this is a long-term investment where we want him to be the franchise quarterback, I don't want his confidence crushed in that first year. Sam Darnold is a different case. Sam Darnold has kind of handled the big stage. Sam Darnold also played at a marquee program that was on the big stage all the time at
the Rose Bowl.
Played in the Rose Bowl. He had a bunch of epic moments. Josh Allen, look, Wyoming is a D1 school, but it is still small school stature compared to SC. You have to have a different approach. And when he's ready, we'll put him out there. But he wasn't ready for it. Carson Wentz was ready for it. Dak Prescott, in a way, was ready for it. You know, I just think with Josh Allen, you just want to take your time and make sure you do right by him, because you don't want a situation where his second year, his third year, he's still reeling from the effects of whatever happened his rookie season.
Yeah, to me it comes down to just the offensive line's not good enough right now. And if that's the case, you have to have a quarterback that has the answers. In other words, he's got enough experience, enough moxie to be able to navigate those waters. And he's just not there yet. I think Sam Darnold is, even though that Jets offensive line is not great, it is a little bit better than Buffalo's, and he's shown – he can get through everything a little bit quicker, get the ball. He's just more comfortable. He's just more advanced, really, is how it all boils down. All right, let's get to this little segment here, turning up the heat. What do we got?
Some drones.
Ooh, that is nice.
Some nice turn up the heat movie music. Yeah, a little 2x4.
Knockoff movie music?
Mm-hmm. And a blowtorch.
Turning up the heat. This is where we need Cam. We need Cam's deep voice here for turning up the heat.
He's going to be here in 10 minutes. Missed it.
Oh, Cam, killing us. Players that must answer the hype in 2018, Buck. There's been so much buildup around these four guys that we mentioned that we're going to talk about here. Now the question is, can they deliver? Now, the first three, the track records are very limited. The fourth one, a guy we've talked about already in the pod, there's plenty of track record to go off of. But let's just go in order here. Jimmy Garoppolo. At the time, it gets lost in the shuffle here. They made him the highest-paid player in the league. And obviously a bunch more contracts have come in after that. But at that point in time, Jimmy Garoppolo, they made the highest-paid player in the league off 5 games.
Unbelievable. Now, look, I understand you're talking about a team that had a tough time scoring points, getting wins. Jimmy Garoppolo comes over. They reel off 5 straight wins. He looks like the savior. And he played reasonably well in Kyle Shanahan's offense. Passer rating was almost to 100. Touchdown interception ratio wasn't really what I would expect, like 7-5. Like you like to see better.
For the highest paid player in the league is what
you're saying? Yeah, you like to see better. But Kyle Shanahan found a way to create opportunities for Jimmy Garoppolo with the weapons that he had around them. Made Marquise Goodwin look like a legitimate number one wide receiver. They win the offseason. They added some weapons around him with the running backs, even though they lose Jerick McKinnon to an ACL injury this weekend. Jimmy Garoppolo has a lot of pressure on him because so many people have been quick to jump on him as an elite tier one player. And I'm just not ready to do that. We talked about it. You've studied all of his throws and all of his games from the preseason. I've looked at two or three of the 49ers games from the preseason. And what I'll say is defenses have adjusted to how he plays, and they haven't got to the really scheming up part of it. Mm-hmm. He is going to have to take his game up a notch to not only fulfill the expectations that come along with that contract, but to help the San Francisco 49ers win games.
Yeah, look, he is extremely accurate. He is a very talented thrower. I still think, though, there's more growth to take place there. He just hadn't played a lot. That's natural. I mean, if anybody else, we were talking about a guy going into his sixth, he started a couple games with the Patriots, but somebody that hasn't started a complete season yet.
Seven games total.
So the expectation would be, hey, there's still a learning curve here. And there is, but it doesn't get discussed with him because they went on a little winning streak there at the end of the season. So I think he's very talented. He's very accurate. I do not think it's going to be a smooth ride for him. I think there's going to be some bumps along the way. I think there's going to be a point in time where there's going to be pundits saying, how did they pay him this much money based off this sample size? I also think when you look at it without Kyle Shanahan, I don't know that everybody would be so all in on Jimmy. I really like Jimmy. I can't say that I love him yet. I love Kyle Shanahan, and he's got it out of different quarterbacks. I think a lot of people are buying into Kyle Shanahan as much or not more even than Jimmy.
It's like going to the store and getting a toy, getting an old G.I. Joe, and you get like a little bonus. You get a bonus soldier with it. I think with Jimmy Garoppolo, part of the fascination is you're seeing him right there on aisle one. I know Toys R Us is no longer there, but you go to aisle one, and you're like, oh, I get Jimmy Garoppolo and Kyle Shanahan. It's a two for one. Let me get there because I got Kyle Shanahan supporting him. Kyle Shanahan is one of the best schemers and offensive play designers in football. And we saw the effect that he had on Matt Ryan with him and without him. And I think it's similar with Jimmy Garoppolo. He can elevate his game. I just wonder, though, when people get a feel for Jimmy Garoppolo playing with Kyle Shanahan, how do they adjust? How do they continue to stay one step ahead of the posse when they begin to see and get a feel for his tendencies as a quarterback?
This just got me thinking totally nothing to do with football. Do they put toys in cereal anymore, Sully? Did they do that? When you were a kid, did they have toys in your cereal?
Not really.
That was the best.
It was a little treat, maybe like a baseball card or two.
As
kids,
it was in a little plastic bag, it was
shrink wrapped in a little deal. And so you'd get literally as a kid, you go to the grocery store. It might be the worst cereal ever, but it had a little toy in there. So I'd pick out which toy you wanted. That determined which cereal you would get. I haven't seen that in a long time. I don't remember my kids ever having that. So maybe they decided that probably wasn't a good thing there to have toys.
They need to bring it back, though.
I loved it. You got your cereal and a toy.
Sounds like a pretty good idea.
You tolerated the cereal to get the toy. That's what you did back in the day. All right, another player with tremendous hype. I think we both had him as the top player in this last draft class is Saquon Barkley. So there we go. Turn it up.
Turn up the heat.
Saquon Barkley, Buck, the hype is out there. Can he live up to it?
It's going to be so tough for him to live up to it. But here's why I am a big believer in Saquon Barkley being very productive as a rookie. He plays on an offense where the main cog of the offense is Odell Beckham Jr. Odell Beckham Jr. is the focal point of the offense, and everyone else kind of like feeds off of what he does. And so the defensive attention will focus on him in the passing game. You'll get double teams headed in 13's direction. That'll open up the field not only for Evan Ingram, Sterling Shepard, but for Saquon Barkley, not as a runner, but as a receiver. I think worst case, he can do what Christian McCaffrey did for his team last year, catching the ball out the backfield. Maybe he's not a productive runner. Maybe he doesn't spit out 100-yard rushing games. But I believe you want to study him by looking at the scrimmage yards. I think he should be able to get near 100 scrimmage yards, combination of rushing yards and receiving yards each week, because I think they can get him 12 to 15 touches each week. And I think with five or six of those being in the passing game, I think he can get to that mark.
I love Saquon Barkley's game. Can I just cheat, though, and say, can you get back to me in a week? Because if he gets after the Jags with the speed that they have at linebacker and he can make a big-time impact, then I think literally after one game, that's a small sample size, we'd be like, good as advertised.
Oh, for sure.
Good as advertised.
And I think that's a big key. He has to be able to get off. I can't wait to see what Pat Shurmur has in store for him. How would they use him in the screen game? Yep. How would they displace him? Would they use him in empty and do some of those things? Even some of the things that we didn't see Shermer use in Minnesota, I think he can add to the playbook. I know he has been kind of in the lab messing around with it. I can't wait to see what they do at number 26.
All right, next one on the list here. Let's get back to the quarterbacks. Pat Mahomes, another turn up the heat. God, Cam would have been so good for that little segment. Pat Mahomes, again, I think this is very similar to Garoppolo, even a smaller sample size, obviously just playing a game last year and what we've seen in the preseason. But I think it's another two-for-one deal. It's a package deal. If it's Pat Mahomes by himself, I'm not maybe as excited about it. Andy Reid being the two-for-one special there with Mahomes is what I think has a lot of people fired up.
But. Oh, absolutely. It's another thing. Like, once again, we're right there. Like, look, it's Jimmy Garoppolo right here in one aisle, but on the aisle, like a little further down, oh, Pat Mahomes and Andy Reid, I get two for one. I get the play caller, and I think it's really important that we understand the play caller because we just watched how a play caller elevated Jared Goff. Jared Goff was a guy that some were saying was a bust. Sean McVay comes and elevates him to a Pro Bowl level. Andy Reid certainly can do the same thing for Pat Mahomes. Pat Mahomes has some flaws in his game. He has some things that you worry about when it comes to potentially being an interception machine. However, when you look at the preseason game and you see how they really tried to make it where Tyreek Hill may catch 130 balls.
By the way, fantasy alert, if you're into fantasy football, if you for some reason you haven't had your draft yet, last minute, I took Tyreek Hill early. I took Tyreek Hill and Marquise Goodwin early.
PPR league. PPR league.
Big,
because
big.
I can see where Tyreek Hill could have some games where he has 10, 11 catches on screens.
Yep.
Really individual routes where they get it to him in the flat and do some really, really nice stuff to get him involved. I think Pat Mahomes is going to succeed because Andy Reid has made every quarterback successful. He'll find a way to figure out Pat Mahomes. He may have some up and down games the first quarter, the first half of the season, but I think by the last half of the season, he'll be worked out. I think he'll be productive.
One of the things I love that they've done with him is a lot of bunch stuff. So you get a lot of quick uncovers. So you can just get the ball out quick. Boop. Let those guys go. Usually it's Tyreek Hill, the recipient there. But then also they'll do some 3-by-1 stuff, and they'll get they do a great job of getting Kelce isolated. And a one-on-one player, when you're a quarterback and you can identify, you've got one-on-one on the backside with a tight end that can win against, doesn't matter, corners, safeties, whoever you throw out there, you've got a winner. So that makes the quarterback position a lot easier to play. I think, though, analogy-wise, we should probably stick with Snickers and just go when you have just the quarterback, it's just like one of those regular Snickers. But you get the play caller to come with it. I think you go king size, and I think that's what you get there.
Oh.
And Andy Reid would appreciate a good Snickers.
He would appreciate a good Snicker bar.
Shareable size. Yeah, the shareable size,
yes.
As they say now.
Yes. Yeah. Is that what it's called? Is that?
I think so.
Not king size anymore?
No, yeah. They're supposed to share those big things.
I mean, you shouldn't have. No one should eat a king size Snicker bar.
That's a bit
like
much.
That's gluttonous. If you're
a little bit.
I will say this. Nothing changed my life quite like when I was in fourth or fifth grade and they introduced the Snickers ice cream bars.
Oh, those are
that
awesome.
Is
my mom
changer.
Would buy them. They'd be like in a 6-pack buck, and I just eliminated them. Crushed them.
Those are awesome.
The best. It was like two things that you love, ice cream and Snickers, and they just made it all one.
How can it get better?
Anyway, sorry. Last one. We'll go through this one quick because we talked about him a bunch earlier. Khalil Mack's got some pressure on him here, Buck.
Yeah, he has some pressure on him.
Turn up the heat.
Oh, look at that.
That's also my give him the heater.
Give him the heater. Throw the fastball. He does have pressure on him. When you sign a guy to that kind of money. And
get some water.
He's in a new location. I think you want to see what he plays out. Look, he's been a defensive player of the year. He's been all pro at two spots. I want to see what Vic Fangio does with him. Send him in a new location, hunting some marquee quarterbacks in the NFC North. We'll see if he can be a difference maker. I mean, on paper, you would like to think that Khalil Mack could push maybe the Bears into playoff contention just on the strength of their defense alone. We'll get a chance to see how good he really is now because he's playing beside his best supporting cast when it comes to the defense personnel that is beside him.
No question, Buck. And if you're thirsty for some more NFL goodies, be sure to check out our preview videos. We'll have previews of some of the top games this weekend. You can find those NFL.com/MTSvideo, I believe. Where else can they find these videos, Sully?
YouTube. Go to NFL or YouTube.com/NFL, and they'll be up there as well.
You see some of these previews where we break down some of these games, and we'll have a really nice preview episode for you coming up here in a couple days where we'll look at both the NFL weekend and the college football weekend. But speaking of college football, Buck, let's look back a little bit. Week 1, the official week 1 after week 0. Not a huge fan of week 0, but week 1 There were some interesting games there, a lot to touch on. Selfishly, you know where I'm going right off the jump.
Where are you going?
How did we lose that game to Penn State?
Oh, was that game tight?
Did you get a chance to watch it?
I mean, I'm sorry. Was the game tight? You felt like the game was tight? I know it went to overtime, but you felt like it was tight?
Did you watch it?
Yeah, I watched it. You felt like it was tight?
38.
You felt like the field goal was like a
I didn't love the field goal. Here's the thing, though. In hindsight, gosh, we're driving 31-31, and Jay Lamar, a very talented running back, I think we're about the 20-ish. He breaks like three or four tackles and ends up scoring with a minute 40-something left.
Too much time.
If he just goes down.
Take a knee. Does Brian Westbrook take a knee?
He goes down at the knee. We kick a field goal at the end of the game. It's over. It's a wrap. But then it was like everything that could go wrong goes wrong. We're up 38-31, 105,000 people at Penn State, scared to death. I'm watching it there with my son's got his App State jersey on. Like, he went to a game a couple years ago. He's got an Armani Edwards App State jersey on. And so we're there, and I'm like, he's got the Armani jersey on. This is 11 years to the day.
It's meant to be.
It's all lined up for us. This is going to be amazing. I almost – but I'll even show you. Look at this. I think this is why it's my fault that they didn't win.
You had to tweet
you
ready.
You didn't jinx him.
My wife blamed me on this.
He composed the tweet. Had it ready. He's like, I'm just going to have it.
I had it ready to go. I'm going to show you.
I'm going to have it right here,
DJ. I'm going to show you what I had, Buck. Hold on. Oh, crud. I'll find it. I had a Michael Jackson moonwalking GIF just ready to roll. I had it already queued in my phone.
I know you were ready.
That's my fault. That's the biggest issue.
I think that was my fault.
You teed it up or too early.
This is what I've learned.
We got a quarterback though. Our quarterback was nice. First start.
Team played well. Now does Penn State owe you one? They come.
Yeah, it wasn't a return. There's no return visit this one. No, they're not coming.
One time deal.
The Tar Heels are coming though.
We're not very good. We're not very good. Like, I sat there and watched that Cal game somehow, and
I'll be honest with you, I did not see it.
Why would you?
Yeah,
I'll be honest. Like, I hate to admit this, I didn't have a lot of faith in it. I didn't click over. I'm at home watching other games, and I know Carolina's on. I didn't click over to the Carolina game until it was 2 minutes left.
Oh my gosh, was it a close game?
I mean, it got closer, but I mean, 4 interceptions. And Cal isn't great, so that means we're. Whatever, but the ACC is down based on what I saw.
Florida State.
This weekend.
They look terrible. By the way, Sully, go ahead, pat yourself on the back. Go play it. Bounces back. Florida State, I like him big in this one.
Come on, Florida State. Yeah. Really tagging him. They put their hands on Virginia Tech.
Yeah, ooh. Sully. Sully. Yeah,
They did put their hands on him. Sully wanted Fuentes to come back and be Tennessee's coach at one point. I think that's a tough listen.
That's a tough listen right there.
Ooh, that was bad.
Yeah. Hey.
I just needed to give myself a little applause.
Yeah. Which leads us to the Tennessee game.
Oh. I noticed that's not listed. That's not listed.
Sully
here.
Put the we don't need to talk about that. Down here. Don't see Tennessee.
And
listed.
He picked against
Wait, hold on. Will, yeah, Will Greer just threw another one. He just threw another
touchdown.
He did. Yeah.
I asked him at Elite 11 not to throw 5 touchdowns on Tennessee, and what did he do? Went out there and threw 5 touchdowns.
Oh, there you go.
And put 400 on him.
Yep. That's why I picked him.
I will say this.
LSU, by the way, was my big takeaway from the weekend.
Ooh. One, I'm going to say
they
this.
They got a decent – all they needed is a quarterback. They got a competent quarterback.
And
that's all they needed.
Miami's so overrated.
Yeah. I think that's a bigger takeaway.
I got to give you your credit on that one.
We desperately want the U to be back, and they're just not. They're just not back. And
I don't know if you can ever recapture the magic that they had, man. They owned the state. Anybody went to Miami for that time.
I mean, you could make an argument that UCF is the best team in Florida.
And it's not close.
Yeah, I mean.
Florida maybe too?
Yeah, like. I don't know.
They've got the best quarterback, I can tell you that much.
McKenzie Milton. Yeah, for sure. He was throwing it all over. Now, the Florida State game I want to go back to because I thought it was interesting. Like,
what are they doing?
They cannot run the ball. And I know Virginia Tech
all
plays
lateral.
a nasty defense, and they play all man-to-man. And Francois was making his first game back. But, man, I felt like they threw it so much. But they could not.
There was a ridiculous stat about the number of negative plays that they had.
So
like they only had 28 offensive plays and went for positive yardage.
All three of us had more yards in the third quarter than Florida State did.
They couldn't. And then Cam Akers, that play where he couldn't take it a distance, that corner ran him down from the backside, that ended up being a very, very big play. Virginia Tech, who knows, man? They're young, but that defense is nasty. I'm just surprised.
It's Bud Foster.
Bud Foster.
Every year.
How can we he doesn't have a head job.
I think he's turned down jobs, though. I think he's comfortable. He's got a good gig there. But I just think, to me, the big takeaways, we'll get to the two big games, but LSU was a big takeaway just because we know they always are going to have athletes, defensive linemen, secondary players,
competent
running backs, receivers. Just they need something at quarterback, and Joe Burrow's provided that for them.
Gave them solid.
They could be – I mean, I don't want to overstate it, but if I told you that they were – to beat one of them. They play Georgia, Bama. If they beat one of them, I wouldn't be surprised they beat one of them.
No, I wouldn't be surprised. They're talented. Yeah. Now, they're talented. They've always been talented on defense. They've always had skill guys. In those games, because they typically play Alabama close, but Alabama will beat them 24-3 because they just can't make enough plays. If he can just kind of hang in there and make a few plays like he made.
Georgia is at home. Alabama is at home. They're going to win one of those two games.
Yeah. I think so.
I mean, they could be a 10-11 win team. That would not surprise me at all.
Not at all.
But that was one big takeaway. The Auburn-Washington game, Washington just everything kind of went against them. I intimated about the fact that I knew Trey Adams wasn't going to play. Yeah. So with him not there, that's a big piece to be missing. I thought Auburn's D-line could kind of control the line of scrimmage a little bit. But I was shocked. Washington's receivers made some unbelievable plays in this game, and they just couldn't finish drives, couldn't make kicks, couldn't finish drives. Shot themselves in the foot a little bit.
Yeah, but I was surprised. I'll give them credit, man. They actually went toe-to-toe with Auburn. Defensively, UW's defense, Auburn's defense, it was a defensive struggle. I will say when you look at – Auburn's D-line, man, the athleticism and power up front. But when you go back and look at the lack of production Auburn had against Washington's front line, you can make the same thing. It's just different. SEC ball is just a little different in the trenches when it comes to the D-line play. And that has always been the biggest takeaway when Pac-12 teams have to go out and play SEC teams in bowl games or these neutral site games. Typically, the defensive line from the SEC teams kind of take over. And I think that played out in this Auburn-Washington
matchup. And turnovers. I mean, just a couple turnovers there for Washington.
They beat up Browning, though. They beat them up.
So, anyways, it was a good competitive game. I think Washington with Chris Peterson will continue to get better throughout the year. And everybody's kind of said, oh, the Pac-12's done. Well, I think Washington's still that team. I keep an eye on Oregon just because the quarterback played out of his mind. I know they didn't play anybody,
but he's
somebody to keep an eye
on. Arizona State.
Hey, people can laugh all they want. That team was ready to play, and they looked sharp. They looked very sharp.
I was really impressed with how they looked. I did not think that they would look.
And Herm was smart. I'm telling you, the smartest thing he did, he went and got that defensive coach from San Diego State to put in that 3-3-5, and that thing is a monster. You saw San Diego State gave Stanford a little bit of a game there until it got away from them, but that defense is tough to prepare for that scheme.
Well, it's coming from everywhere.
Yes.
You just never know how to identify and all those things. Quickly, Notre Dame, Michigan.
Yep.
Surprised at all?
I was just – I don't know why. Offensive line was terrible last year, and some reason I just kind of glossed over that and thought, you know, their defense is so good. But Notre Dame, I'll tell you what, Notre Dame is a physical, physical football
team.
They
beat them up.
And they
did. I think
that
was the thing. They beat them up, and
they're a really good team.
They were sharp coming out. Like Brandon Wimbush, they kind of set them up for some success, and they're also big.
Yeah.
I think the one thing that maybe Brian Kelly learned from the whooping they took at the hands of Alabama in the championship game. If you notice, they are a much bigger team on the perimeter. Mm-hmm. Their wide receivers are big. They can win those 50-50 balls. They do a good job of just kind of overwhelming little corners.
Well, here's the thing. Wimbush is not going to nickel and dime you and beat you that way. That's not the way he's going to play.
Run, shot.
That's how they're built. And you saw that. Throw some up. Let those receivers go up and make some plays for you, and then use your legs. I mean, he carried the ball 19 times in that game. Only 59 yards, but got what he needed there in that run game. And I just thought, again, the line of scrimmage, especially that Michigan offensive line is a major, major issue.
And it ain't getting any easier for those Michigan Wolverines. Oh, that schedule's not easy.
Last thought on this before we leave the college thing. I want to see if you agree with me on this. I don't know if you got to see it. Not a sexy game, but Ohio State, Oregon State. That was the first tape. When the tape rolled in, I downloaded it and wanted to watch the coach's copy.
Mm-hmm.
Buck, NFL talent-wise, I don't care about where they are at college, but if you're projecting from college to the NFL – and I realize Clemson's got some good players up front defensively. There's a bunch of them. If you told me I could pick one of those two defensive lines to take with me to the NFL, I'd take Ohio State every day of the week and twice on Sunday.
Let's see. Bosa. Yeah, I mean, I think you have to. I think just
– when you look at Bosa, 2, 86. They got another freshman, Troy Vincent. I think it's Troy Vincent's kid.
Troy Vincent's son, yeah.
Dude, they are explosive. Explosive. Joey Bosa's little brother, I mean, he's the best player in college football.
I mean he's going to have
he's a freak.
Great hand skills, just like his brother. I mean, just plays hard, motors there, is a technician. They have all the stuff. You know, Clemson didn't play anybody, but we'll get a true test on Clemson. So I'm going to withhold my opinion until after we see them against A&M.
I put it on Instagram. If you want to go check it out, just go to Instagram. Just move the sticks on Instagram. I put some plays, a collection of different defensive linemen for Ohio State. You tell me what you think when you look at
it. Chase Young.
He's number two. He's number two, freak show. He's a sophomore.
Oh, but I think we're burying the lead. We've talked about all these quarterbacks, and we haven't mentioned Haskins from Ohio State.
Oh, yeah, he's legit.
As a potential prospect.
Yeah.
He is a dude. He is a thrower. He can
did you
spin
know?
It.
I mean, I saw him. Obviously, remember last year, you were at the game, right, when he came in?
Yeah, but we knew him from Elite 11. He has always been a dude. He's from Maryland. It was kind of a surprise that he left there to go to Ohio State. Tall. He has a whip. He can throw it. He can do it. Like, he is a prototypical guy, and people got a taste of it. And you see.
Is he a redshirt sophomore, by the way?
Oh yeah, he could be Dunzo. He could be Dunzo. He could be one and Dunzo. But big arm. What, five touchdowns?
Five touchdowns and a pick.
Man,
313 yards.
I know Ohio State
only completed 73% of his passes though.
They're not used to seeing a dude like that.
Different. I watched the defensive tape on that one. I did not watch the offensive tape, but flipping around every time I flipped over.
And
by the way, the Oakland A's center fielder has a hose. Oh, Kyler Murray. Holy crud.
Not for 11.
Yeah, he uncorked a couple deep balls.
I don't know if he's ever lost a game. He never lost a game as a starter in high school, Skyline High School, I think, in Dallas. I don't think he ever lost.
A couple state titles.
Like
15-0, put up some points.
Crazy.
That'll be a fun team to watch this year.
Before we get out of here, our favorite morning show, Good Morning Football. I was watching some tape this morning, Buck, had it on in the background, and lo and behold, what do I see? But Greg Rosenthal.
Rosie!
On TV, GMFB from London, the Around the NFL crew is all over in London for 10 days. Didn't send us to London, just the Around the NFL guys, neither here nor there. Anyways, he's on GMFB, and I want you to just take this in because there's a lot to unpack here. Go ahead, Sully.
One, are you nervous? Two, what's the atmosphere been like among NFL fans abroad?
I am not nervous because this is like a home game in London. They love us so much here. Like, I don't know what the international laws on this, but I think we own the UK at this point. Like, when we set up that show, which is going to be Tuesday night, which I'm really looking forward to, we put it up like dumb Americans at 1 a.m, and the tickets still sold out in about 3 hours overnight. So we know we're going to get a rowdy crew. It's basically like the Beatles, you know, coming to America, but in reverse.
Totally.
Oh.
Totally.
Okay.
Yeah. You're like Hasselhoff over there. Huge international, domestically. Still getting there. Greg?
It's the Jags, isn't it?
Greg, the Paul McCartney of the Around the League podcast. Who do you got?
All right. Let me unpack a couple things here for you, Buck. There's some main points I want to break down here. Number one. He said that's a home game for the Around the NFL pod, meaning that on domestic soil, it's not really – they're basically living every day as an away game, which I can agree with that. The show, allegedly – I don't know what this show is, but apparently they've got a show Tuesday night. Like, when I hear show, I mean, is there singing? Is there dancing? Is there improv? Like, what is this show that they're speaking of?
I don't.
And how big is the theater if this thing sold out in 3 hours? Give me over under.
Oh, evidently it's not that big.
Well, evidently, you think? How big are we talking here?
I don't know.
You got a mole over there. You got Erica giving you some inside scoop.
We could find out.
I need a number. Capacity.
Maybe 100.
100?
I would say.
Give or take 40 to 50?
40 to 50 to 60, maybe.
Sold out show. Okay, I need to know what goes on at this show. I mean, is Dan Hansen going to juggle? I mean, what's going on here? Next thing, we're the Beatles. I'm not even going to go there on that one.
I'm
going to leave that one to you.
Oh, the Beatles. I think sometimes what happens when we get a mic in front of us, we get a little excited. We get kind of caught up in the emotion. And I think maybe he was caught up in the emotion, and the Beatles were the first thing that came to mind. Because I just can't understand how, in any way, shape, or form, that crew could be compared to the Beatles, arguably the
Look, I think we can history. All we can all agree that Mark Sessler would be, you know, Paul McCartney. We can give him that. But outside of that, there's no Ringo. There's no George. I mean, that's it. It's just a one-man band, and that's Sessler. Although I would say Westling in there as well. Maybe they've got two. They need to come up with a duo, but not the Beatles. Come on. And then the last thing was my man, Pete Schrags. Peter comes with you're like Hasselhoff. You're very popular. Foreign country, but domestically, still work in progress.
Still work in progress. Still work in progress.
Way. And then he referred to the podcast as the Around the League podcast. Wrong name.
Wrong name.
So they're still trying to gain some traction there.
Almost half their downloads are international.
Are they really? Mm-hmm. I would have guessed more.
Yeah.
Anyway, so we had some fun there with Rosenthal. I hope the boys have a good time over there in England. Again, at least a couple of them there. Hope Sessler and Wes have a good time. Hansus and Greg. All right, that's going to do it for us here. Sully, what else do we need to promote, buddy?
Yeah, just make sure you go and check out those week one previews, and then obviously we're going to dive face first straight into week one NFL on Thursday, get you ready for the weekend ahead.
All right, so that's going to do it for us today. Thank you guys for downloading, for subscribing, for leaving us a review there on Apple Podcasts. We do appreciate that. Be on the lookout for more Move the Sticks content coming your way. Buck, anything you want to add before we jump out of here? What are we promoting here? What are we working on?
Oh, man, I can't even figure out. I'm trying to figure out what I'm going to write the notebook on this week. I don't know, the Khalil Mack trade, maybe Teddy Bridgewater being a great fit in New Orleans, those things.
A lot of normal stuff. Yeah, be sure to check that out, NFL.com/Bucky Brooks. You can find all Bucky's work right there. And again, if you're looking for a podcast to listen to, the Around the League podcast really is a humdinger. Like, you'll just search Around the League. Mm-hmm. If you don't find it, then I'm sorry, I can't help you. That's gonna do it for us today. Thank you guys so much. This has been Move the Sticks, presented by Castrol Edge. See you next time.
Thanks for downloading Move the Sticks with Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks. For more, go to nfl.com/podcasts.